Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and you're at Women Are Not Funny Radio, where we occasionally prove the premise wrong. Today is the third week in Women Are Not Funny Fitness Month, and I have just about given up on my physical fitness. Maybe our guest today will persuade me otherwise, but I'm thinking that we should focus instead on being intellectually fit. Now, I know that you are totally accustomed to us being unfunny, but you are unaccustomed to us being intellectually useful. So if we try that today and we succeed, get used to it. I mean, it will be amazing. It will amaze you. It will amaze me. It will amaze our guests, but let's just see what happens. Our guest today is someone that I have been aware of for over a year. I've been aware of her work, and she hails from across the ocean from me. She is from Great Britain, and it's ironic that last week's guest was also from Great Britain, but someone who's now become an American. Today we have the real deal, a true British fitness expert, and you'll find out more about that. But before I formally introduce Caroline Radway, I have to ask her those two very important questions that all of my guests answer in order to put the conversation into context. So, Caroline, I'm glad you're here today, but I just wonder, are you using your appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to something better?
Definitely. This is really a minor part in my game plan, and what I really want is to be on Oprah.
Oh, man, does that hurt. Well, it makes me even more. It makes me even more anxious to know, are you here to take over my show? Do you view this as a tryout just to take over Women Are Not Funny?
To be honest, I think you are actually quite funny, so I think I'd be a much better presenter because I'm really not funny at all. So, yeah.
Oh, see, well, then you really saved yourself on that one, my darling, because all her feelings from your earlier answer have disappeared. Caroline Radway is, as I said, from Great Britain. She is. She lives in Southampton, and she is totally immersed and does it as her career, work in fitness. She is a fitness trainer. She holds classes. She is an author. And through a combination of those things, she is a fitness superstar. She manages, though, to have time for a variety of sports that she personally engages in. And she is a champion windsurfer, a surfer. She likes to do mountain biking, and goodness knows what else that she does. She is totally devoted to the outdoors and is a specimen of fitness who uses her fitness levels to achieve just all kinds of fun things and fun activities, sports activities. And one of the things that is so amazing about Caroline is that she was actually a commissioned officer in the British Army. And then when she left the Army, she said, and I'm assuming, Caroline, that this was the case, since you claim that you spent some of your 20s, I'm probably not much of it, as a fatty, and we'll have to have you define what that means. But then she went full-time into the world of fitness, and what a cool and clever way, Caroline, to be involved in fitness as a career and then also let that carry into and enhance all of these sports activities that you enjoy so much.
It all fits together quite nicely, really.
Well, absolutely. I mean, how is it that you were so brilliant to come up with that plan?
There was no plan, to be honest. I've always been interested in activity and the outdoors and that sort of thing. But On the flip side, I have definitely always battled with my weight, and I still do. You know, I am that person who can look at a slice of bread and gain 3 pounds, you know, like so many people out there. I really do relate to so many people's issues. And obviously, I've got my strategies that help me kind of get over that, which is what I'm trying to share with everybody through the training, through the nutrition and that sort of thing, and all the lifestyle factors. But really, a lot of, you know, some people do exercise because, I mean, I do exercise because I love it. But on the other hand, it's quite nice knowing that, you know, if I do that extra session in the gym, it's going to mean I get a better session out on the water as well. So yeah, that's, I kind of like combining the two. And it also means I get to work out without even thinking that I'm working out. Because, you know, when you find active things you enjoy, then you just get, you know, it's no longer a chore, and it all kind of ties in together, doesn't it, really?
Well, Caroline, what you don't know is that I took something of an opposite career path years ago when aerobic dancing was quite in vogue in the United States, and I assume it was in vogue in England at the same time, you know, very highly choreographed sort of aerobics activity. I was an aerobics instructor. And I loved it because I loved to dance, and it was very social, of course, to have my regular classes. I was self-employed when I did it. But I could see that the whole field of aerobics and fitness was becoming more professional, and I was professionalizing, as I would refer to it. And so I still had some education that I needed to do, but I decided instead of a degree in exercise physiology that I was headed for law school. So I left that world behind. You know, I decided if I were going to stay in fitness, I needed to probably get a degree and become credentialed in some sort of way. And at the time, I was certified as an aerobics instructor with this program, but essentially it meant I went for training every 3 months or so to get new choreography. You know, getting the kind of professional training that you have received. But anyway, my point in telling this story, besides just one more opportunity to talk about myself, which is my favorite activity, is that I, you know, what a dumb thing for me to have done is, you know, to have left that field, because when you are a professional exercise instructor, fitness instructor, trainer, and it is your job, it is very easy to get your workouts in, right? Because that's your job, right? So
no,
I wasn't about
actually
to
not
miss
at all. Honestly,
I was what?
Not at all, because my job's not about my clients' workouts. With aerobics, yeah, but when I train a client, my role is as their coach. So I'm not training with them necessarily. Sometimes I'll, like, particularly with my boot camps, I might join in for a little bit just to sort of keep them, you know, kind of push them along a little bit. But my role is actually not to work out at all. So I could very easily spend a day on my feet all day, kind of getting tired, but not working out. And if
yeah.
I did join in, it's certainly not my level of workout. So actually the fitness professional, one thing a lot of people are very bad at is doing their own training, because they get so tired, burnt out by training everybody else, that by the end of the day they don't do their own training. I'm quite good at prioritizing my training because it's so important to me. I've been injured before. I know what it's like to lose fitness, and I do not want to do that again. So I implement the strategies that I get my clients to implement in terms of fitting in my workouts. But I have to be as organized as everyone else. It's not easy because I have to do it after a day on my feet where I might be tired, whereas other people might be desperate to move after a day at the office. And I've actually got another coach, a guy called Mike Marler, who's a legend kettlebell coach. And he, at the moment, I'm doing sort of coaching with him, so he's writing my programs for me. So I've got someone kicking my butt as well as me kicking everyone else's.
Well, that is, you know, and what you just said makes perfect sense to me, but it also proves that I was just mistaken, because I know you teach an occasional class, but I thought you taught classes more often. But you are, most of your work then is with individuals doing personal training And that your classes, if I understand it, happen on those occasions when you offer a boot camp or when you offer something like this one-off thing that you are about to do.
My boot camps are regular. They're regular. I train, they're 3 times a week. But in a boot camp, I do not need to do the workout with my clients because what I need to do is make sure they're doing it correctly. So it's not like I'm stood at the front of the class, I show that they know what they're doing, I show them what they're doing, and I might join in with some of it, but really I need to make sure they're doing it correctly, because with a boot camp, the exercises we do are actually quite technical. If someone's doing, in some aerobics classes, you will get people, I know body pump is one where, there's a lot of squatting involved, and squatting's a highly technical maneuver, and in a body pump class, quite often the squatting isn't being sort of policed enough, so you have to be quite attentive to all the clients. And when you've got a big class, it does mean that I'm not doing it. And if I was joining in, it wouldn't be 100% intensity. So when I work out, I want to work out. So my workouts are split from my actual coaching. I will be active because I'm moving around when I'm coaching people, but it certainly doesn't really count as a workout, because a workout needs to be quite intense and needs to be focused, really. So if I'm distracted coaching other people, it's never going to be an intense workout for myself. And if anything, it can, like I said, it can kind of compromise my workouts because I'm sort of doing a bit extra that, and obviously actually what we want to do is not overtrain as well. So actually one of the things that a lot of trainers suffer from, and I actually train another personal trainer who does a lot of classes, but it's very hard to train her because she's overtraining. So, in a way I kind of say that, people who are out of the profession, they are in a potentially a better position because, you've got the opportunity not to need to overtrain. It's all swings and roundabouts. There's positives and negatives to every side of it. But I certainly don't get my workouts in just by going through the day. I have to schedule them in just like everybody else.
Well, not only did you make the point that it hasn't provided you with an easy out for a workout, but you totally made my point about why it was a good thing for me to leave, because professionalism is required. I can tell you, Caroline, when I was leading my aerobics classes, I did understand the importance of doing a given move right to keep from injuring yourself and also to have the beneficial effect. But to be perfectly honest with you, I wouldn't have known whether my students were doing it right or not. And
yeah.
I didn't give it the proper kind, of attention at any rate. And it's, it's amazing. Everything changes. The world changes very rapidly, and it also changes slowly. This was some years ago, but the entire field of fitness has changed a lot. And one of the ways that it has changed at that time, certainly, it would have been very, very unusual for someone to have a personal trainer. Now, mm-hmm. It's not commonplace, but it is certainly very widely adopted, the idea that you would have one and it would be to your benefit, and you certainly laid out the reasons why. And that kind of comes, we have to start talking about them at some point. My kettlebells. They almost have a personality. And so, a couple of things that I want us to address. I wasn't joking when I said that I have plans for us to become very intellectual about all of this, but I shall reveal that later. At the moment, I'm just going to tell you that those kettlebells mock me. And the reason I own them in the first place is, although they are nothing new, kettlebells have been around for, and I'm sure you know, when they made their debut, this century, or last century, I suppose, sometime, right, that they were first invented?
Yeah, been around a long time.
So I, despite the fact that they had been around for a long time, for me, they were the cool new thing.
Yeah.
And that was why I wanted them. Okay. I mean, I'll just be honest about it. They were the cool new thing. I had to have some kettlebells. And so I bought them. And when I bought them, I was highly influenced by the look of them. I wanted the cutest possible kettlebells. What do you think about that?
I think that's fine. There are certain technical things you need to be aware of, and a lot of, I mean, I've made the mistake of buying cheaper kettlebells, so slightly different emphasis, but still an emphasis other than, you know, technical kind of prowess of the kettlebell. And I had all sorts of issues. In fact, one had a hole in it that was filled with like polyfiller that, you know, it was just ridiculous. But one of the main things is the length of the handle. So if the handle's really short and squat, which a lot of kettlebells are really short and squat, the actual weight of the kettlebell, the bell shape, the round bit, will balance on the bony bit of your wrist rather than the fleshy bit of your forearm. And that's one of the major, major things. And I get my kettlebells from, there's two places I get mine from. And really that is my criteria, is that they have to be sort of physiologically sound. However, if you have, I mean, were yours kiwi and black?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, you know, if that's going to make you want to use them, then go for it.
So far, it hasn't made me want to use them. It has made me, you know, want to look at them. Now, it's interesting to hear you say, and I just want our listeners to know that on Caroline, there are links on our website to Caroline's websites, to several of them. And her website about Kettlebell Body has links to a place in the U.S. that she recommends where you can buy kettlebells, you know, and order them from this place. And the minimum size at that place, and it just happens to be what mine are too, but mine are 10-pound kettlebells. And just in case there's anyone listening who doesn't know what a kettlebell is, it kind of looks like a handbag in a way.
It looks
like a funny, funky handbag, but it looks kind of like a cannonball, and then it has a handle on it. And mine, the ball part is kiwi, and the handles are black. And my living room in this winter condo is, and I know it's not winter anymore, but this winter condo is, it's red and black and kiwi. So they were actually chosen so that they could reside in my living room. But Caroline, you talked about the length of the handle being an issue. I knew it was an issue, but I thought it was more of a knuckle issue.
More of a what issue?
A knuckle issue. You know, in other words, if the handle were too short, your kettlebell would rub against your knuckles when you were trying to work with it.
I can't really get my head around that, to be honest.
Okay, well, it's clearly something I invented, but...
But maybe yours are really short. I can't imagine maybe, how...
Yeah, I think actually my kettlebells are perfect. I think they're perfect in every way. But there's one problem with them.
What?
They're totally neglected.
Yeah.
I say that they mock me, but the fact of the matter is I mock them by neglecting
them. Not
them,
exactly. Why are you not using them?
I do not know, because shortly after I bought them, I said, okay, I have them. I think I bought them first, and then I listened to a presentation that you made in a teleseminar where you talked all about them.
And it
is very cool, because one of the things that you have done is you have written an extensive program when I say extensive, it deals not only with fitness exercises using the kettlebell, but it also goes into nutrition and lifestyle issues, and it's very comprehensive. But anyway, so you have laid it out for people, but one of the things that I have also been told by other kettlebell experts, and from what you've said, I don't think you'll disagree, that they are so, that you need to use them right. I guess that's what I want to say. They can be very effective in helping you achieve goals in terms of increasing strength, flexibility, even getting an aerobics workout with them. But if you use them wrong, they can harm you. Is that true?
Definitely, definitely. That's where, I mean, in Kettlebell Body, there's a very detailed exercise guide with pictures of every single step, and it's really, really detailed. And all the programs, you know, obviously there's programs that are quite intense, and if you've done any kind of kettlebell stuff before, you can plunge straight in. But one of the key things I say at the outset is if you haven't used kettlebells before, then your first stage is just to learn each exercise. And just, you know, you can learn it. I learned initially from DVDs, you know, and actually some of the stuff I learned was slightly incorrect. And I had the unfortunate task of having to unlearn quite embedded habits by this point. But, you know, it is preferable to learn straight away with a qualified instructor on a one-to-one basis. But you can do it yourself if you do it correctly. And you just have to be careful, because I think with everything, like, people go into a gym and they don't know what to do. And that they, you know, I think actually the minute you're aware of something like kettlebells, you're actually in a better position than the majority of people who just turn up at a gym, plod away on a cross trainer for half an hour and then leave, because at least you are beginning to understand that about how the way it all works. So long as you keep that open mind and make sure that you seek to learn rather than straight away be a master of something. And I think that's something that people are so into, this quick fix. They want to lose fat now. They want to have been and done a diet and be back to their old diet and still maintain the results, and they also want to learn something that's quite a skilled thing straight away. And, you know, if you treat it like a skill, like a practice, like with yoga, you know, yoga is very similar. I do a lot of yoga, and there's a lot of yoga flow within Kettlebell Body, but you do not start yoga and be a professional. You know, I've been doing it for years, and I finally can do headstands without having to rest against the wall. I can do handstands and all that sort of thing, but I didn't start out expecting that. I started out just practicing. And if you treat your training like training and practice, then I think you're really onto a winner, really, in terms of the long-term, achieving your long-term goals. Because actually, you know, it is as much about the journey as the destination. And we're also focused on getting somewhere now. But I think what we all need to do is take a step back and just enjoy the process. So I really think for you, getting over any phobia, it doesn't, you know, a kettlebell is simply a tool. So whether you're doing snatches or swings, or you're just doing a deadlift or a squat, or you're holding a kettlebell as you walk around a room, whatever you're doing, there's nothing to be fearful about. You're just doing an exercise, and the kettlebell happens to be something that you're holding when you're doing it.
Oh, well, you know what? You did scare me when you said all those things like squats and...
Right.
But I think walking around the room holding one, I think that is, you know, that's very encouraging to me. Now, here's the question for you that you may strike you as very, very strange. Have you ever heard of Krispy Kreme donuts? Do you have Krispy Kreme donuts in Great Britain?
We certainly do. And my fiancé used to work in an office that was very near a Krispy Kreme shop, and it was whenever it was anyone's birthday, they had to go and buy a whole box of Krispy Kreme. So he'd often come back saying that he'd eaten Krispy Kremes, and yeah, so I've heard of them, definitely. I haven't had one.
They are enormously popular here. I have to say, I'm not much of a donut girl, but I heard this story last night, and I wanted to use Krispy Kremes as an example, but maybe not if you didn't have them in England. But anyway, the story goes is that people do not want to hear what they need to do to lose weight. They want to hear how they can lose weight by eating what they should eat at the Krispy Kreme donut shop in order to lose weight.
I can answer that one really easily.
Honestly,
I can answer that one really easily.
Uh-huh.
It's simple. Eat the middle.
Eat the middle.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, that may or may not be what people are hoping to hear, but...
Sorry, I don't think it was.
I think it is true that, for the most part, we're looking for an easy answer. However, on the other hand, I want to introduce the idea, and I think it's compatible with what you just said. Some of us are motivated by things that are tasks that are really, really difficult. In other words, the harder it is, the more intrigued we are by it, and that's why we set goals for ourselves that are sometimes very difficult to reach, is because that big goal somehow motivates us. So how do you talk someone off that ledge? You know, I'm not saying I need to be, but maybe I do.
As in, you would prefer to have a big goal, or prefer, because I mean, I think everyone's different, and sometimes big goals are inspiring and exciting, and I think they can be great, but then on other times they can be so overwhelming. So for some people, just really having baby steps is the way forward. But plan to have lots of baby steps, you know? So if you know that every day you're going to do one little thing, then that's great for some people. Other people do need to say, right, I'm going to change everything. You know, and that's where I have, you know, my sort of nutrition plan, that there are certain rules and things that I like people to try and follow, but there's a compliance element. And the people who are too set on that all or nothing are often the people who fail, because they want to be so perfect, and if they slip up, then suddenly everything's gone wrong. And it's the analogy that Rachel Cosgrove uses in her book, The Female Body Breakthrough, which is a fantastic book, is if you get a flat tire on the road, what do you do? Do you get out of your car and burst all the other three? No. You know, you get out of your car and you fix the flat tire and you move forward. And that's one of the problems with, if people set themselves, I don't think there's anything wrong with setting too high goals, but if they set themselves an expectation of perfection, and then they don't quite live up to it, and then they jump off that ledge altogether, that's the problem. But really, being moderate, but being consistent, and sticking to a good program most of the time, but allowing yourself the odd treat. And in fairness, whether it's a Krispy Kreme or a slice of cake or some wine or whatever, if there's something you really, really want to incorporate in, there should be room in your diet for that. But you need to be doing most things right. So for me, I know what things I want to include in my week, and I know what things I'm not bothered about. So I'm going to be super healthy all week, and then on a Friday or a Saturday night, I'm going to have those little treats that I want. So I think a lot of people set themselves up for failure so early on, and I just think it's a real shame. You know, there's no reason not to work out. You don't have to be an Olympic athlete to work out. All you need to do is take those steps. So long as you're taking a step forward, doing something. It doesn't have to be a kettlebell workout. It can be a bodyweight workout. It can be going for a walk. You know, it can be eating a banana instead of a chocolate bar, whatever. But I think people are too worried about all the details, and actually you just have to be taking small steps forward, whichever way, you know, whatever you're doing.
Well, I think that's great advice, and I have to say, the thing I can relate to the most is the idea of, I mean, for me, it would be a huge first step, and even though I tend to be motivated by, you know, those huge goals, like, okay, I need to take up the kettlebell because I need to get ready for being able to do the deadlift in the 2012 Olympics, you know, even though I fall party to that and find it somehow very motivating, you're right. You can set yourself up for failure. Mm-hmm. But what I'm dealing with right now, strange to me, is I have absolutely no appetite at all. So probably my favorite part of the Krispy Kreme donut would actually be the middle, and that, you know, that can be a problem too. But I am under doctor's orders to build my strength. And I had something of a medical event in the last year. But prior to that, Caroline, I had this kind of cool thing going on Twitter. There is a woman who writes a wonderful blog, Summer Tomato. Her name's Daria Pena, and she is a food scientist. And one of the things that we did that was so much fun for me is anytime she would show up on Twitter, when I would see her avatar, I would hop up and I would get two dumbbells and I would do 10 lateral raises. And I found that to be very fun and very motivating, but a couple of things have happened. A, I'm not as strong, and B, Daria's not around as much anymore. So I'm going to have to come up with an alternate plan. But okay, so I've told you I'm overmotivated by the big go. But something I read about this past week really intrigued me. There was a term that was put out called completionism, something I had never heard that term exactly. But what this author was describing was that jolt of satisfaction that comes from finishing an activity, if it's something that feels like an accomplishment, even though it doesn't accomplish your goals. So I think that can be a trap as well. For example, you know, taking a little tiny step in the right direction is good as long as you remember it's a step, and also good as long as you don't let it motivate you in the wrong way. Now, let me tell you about this research, because I think it is kind of funny. It was done by two Canadian psychologists, and I don't know their names. And the reason I don't know their names was, in order to look at their article, even an abstract, I would have had to pay $30, you know, to download an abstract. So I decided to skip it. But they did a study, and it involved people who spent some time on a green website, reading about ecology and so forth. And they, by doing so, felt so virtuous just at looking at the website that after they were off the website, they were less altruistic and more likely to cheat or steal, because they felt so good. You know, they felt like they had done a really good thing by being on this green website and reading about how to be green. So let's extrapolate that a little bit and wonder if there is sometimes a problem with one of the people who's on this call. It might be you, it might be me, but it's probably me. If there is not a problem with her going to a kettlebell website, reading about kettlebell, or going to a blog and reading about kettlebell and feeling like she has somehow accomplished an activity towards her fitness. Or let's say she buys kettlebells and owns kettlebells.
Yes.
And it is, you know, this author was using the term completionism for that act. Have you run into that before? Is that something that you think could trip people up?
I've never heard that term, and I do think it's quite interesting, because I have some clients who, when I initially tell them about the sort of dietary changes I want them to make, they'll come back and they'll be like, I've been brilliant this week. And then I look into their food diary, and they've been really good compared to what they were, but every day they might have had a donut or a muffin or something like that. And when I point this out to them, and I tend to use a compliance graph, a grid with people like this, and say, look, you know, check off how many times you are sticking to your diet and how many times you're not, and then look at that as a percentage over the week. And that gives people a really clear, you know, so you can not have perfect foods, you know, 10% of the time, and you will still get great results. If that creeps to 20% to 30%, then you're not going to get great results. And the problem, and so the way I try and explain it to people is there, it's like water. When water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, if you are water and you're at 211, you've done so much of the work, but just not enough to get the results. And it's the same with nutrition. So you can work so hard, and it's just that little tiny step more you need to do to really get results. So I think as soon as you realize that, you've got to put everything into context. So the people who are using that completionism frame of mind are the people who will look at one thing in isolation. And that is something, I recently read a book about sort of money management, and people who just, you can justify every expense, but you can get into humongous credit card debt if you justify every single expense and you don't look at it in the context. And it's exactly the same with food and nutrition and exercise. You know, each individual transaction of course you can say, well, that's good, that's bad, whatever, but nothing's good or bad. There's no fattening foods. There's no diet foods. There's only an overall picture of what's good and what will take you towards your goals, and then there's an overall picture of something that will take you away from your goals. So I think the minute people can start looking in a slightly more broader view, then they'll get away from that completionism, because it's no longer about, oh, well, I did one good thing, I can balance that with one bad thing. And the one thing I think, you know, along those lines is supermarkets and shopping and marketing is where completionism and that mindset to me is the most prevalent, because what people do is they go to their supermarket and they fill their trolleys with food products that aren't real foods, that say on the label that they're healthy. So it might be, I don't know if you have Special K in America, but it's the bane of my life, really. You know, it's sold as being this super healthy product, and people will buy Special K bars, which is just like the cereal added with sugar, and they'll eat that, and then they'll be like, I've been so healthy, I deserve some chocolate. And really, they've actually been unhealthy all day, and then they've rewarded themselves because they feel like they've been healthy. So I certainly see that mindset going on a lot. And I think all I can try and do is educate people that it is about the broader picture. And, you know, if you're buying things because somebody is telling you it's healthy, you've got to learn to see through that. And so long as you know in your mind that you're doing yourself justice, then that's the important thing. And I think encouraging people to be educated about it, encouraging people to be honest with themselves. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have a result or an excuse. And if you are constantly coming up with excuses not to exercise or not to eat right, that's fine. But you've got to understand that it's at the end of the day, it's your choice. So we all make choices in our lives. So I think, you know, even these terms, completionism, it's a convenient excuse, I think, for some people, to kind of say, oh, well, yeah, you know, I did this. And I think we just all need to take responsibility a little bit more for our results. And I know that, you know, I could probably be maybe half a stone or more lighter if I was to be stricter, but I don't want to be. And that's my choice. And I've taken that responsibility on board. So, yeah, that's my thought on the matter, I think.
Well, you know what? It is so delightful, and I really have to laugh because you've said two things that to me are a little bit in opposition of each other, because you are, you know, and I love it. I get it. But you say people have to take responsibility. On the other hand, one of the things you do as a personal trainer that I think probably has a great deal of value to your clients is that you hold them accountable. So while they are responsible, they also are accountable to you, apparently, even not only for their exercise. Do you have them do a food log, and you also have them do an exercise log, I take it?
Yeah, but it is, they have to take responsibility. You know, I'm only with a client, you know, not even three times a week, mostly, you know, two times a week, once a week. They won't get results unless they take responsibility for their actions in every other hour of the day. So, I mean, it's even when we look at celebrities and, oh, they're so lucky, they've got a personal trainer. No one has a personal trainer on their shoulder 24/7 apart from a personal trainer, which is kind of annoying because actually, you know, you go the opposite way. But, you know, nobody has somebody telling them what to do at every second of the day. You've got to take the responsibility yourself for your actions. So all I can do is educate my clients. Obviously, I take them through their own training, but unless they are training with me three times a week, which most people don't because most people can't afford that, they need to be doing their own exercise. That's why I get people to come to my boot camps. But even if you're doing three exercise sessions a week, you can ruin it all in one packet of Krispy Kremes. You know, so they have to take responsibility for that. They could lie to me about their food diary, but that's not taking responsibility. So, you know, even if you're working with a trainer, and actually I think that is one of the first steps of taking responsibility is, you know, as I said, I've got Mike Marla writing me programs at the moment. I'm taking, you know, I can train myself, and I do write myself programs, and I like my own programs, and I'm a bit fussy with who I get to write my programs, which is why it's got to be legend rather than just any old trainer. But I'm taking responsibility by saying to him, right, write me a program, and I'm going to do it. So he's written me a program, and it helps me to make sure that I don't just skip my workout for the day because I know I've got to report back. But that's my way of creating more responsibility, because I know that I'm creating an extra level of push. So if you need to do that, that's fine. I don't think that means that you're not taking responsibility. I mean, I think it means that you're taking an extra step to guarantee that you don't slack when you feel like you – because we all have moments where we don't want to train, where we would rather have a big plate of chocolate than a big plate of broccoli. So whatever you can do to guarantee that you're going to – or to support yourself when you're feeling your weakest, I see that as an absolute positive. And, you know, we're all human, so it's whatever you need to do, really. So I don't think there is a contradiction there at all.
You are disappointing me, Caroline. I was hoping you would say, yes, Kay, it is possible to just turn it over to someone else, become accountable to that other person, but you're not saying that. I don't have a personal trainer, and I never have, and I am the type of person that would have a personal trainer, let's face it, because, you know, I just am very intent on spoiling myself as much as possible. And I told last week about my experience of almost hiring a personal trainer. And Caroline, he was someone who is retired from being a CEO of a rather large restaurant company here in the United States. And so I was intrigued by that, and I made an appointment to go and essentially have us evaluate each other. And we ultimately decided that we wouldn't work together. And part of the reason is that he felt that I was a little resistant, but I believe it is due to CEO behavior. He was never accustomed to having anyone disagree with him openly. But at any rate, I didn't end up hiring him. But in the course of our conversation, I asked him, I said, what do you think the nature of the relationship is between the trainer and the client? And he said exactly the wrong thing to me, because I was recently divorced and this was most unappealing. He said, I think it's like a good marriage. And so I thought, no, thank you to that. But that's my question for you. How do you view yourself vis-a-vis your clients? Do you see yourself as a, you've used the word on several occasions, so I have to take it that you mean it. You call yourself a coach a good bit.
Yeah. I don't just want to be a workout supervisor. I want to coach. I mean, I spend a lot of time talking to clients about their goal, you know, and this is where my new book is, The Love Your Body Plan. It's about uncovering the sort of motivation, the mindset, the self-worth side of things. So in some ways, any good personal trainer will also be a life coach to their clients. You know, I'm coaching people in their nutrition. I'm advising people. I'm not there to supervise their nutrition. So I certainly would call myself a sort of lifestyle and nutrition coach. Exercise-wise, most clients, I am taking them through their workouts, but equally I'm coaching them to take that responsibility. So, I do think that's much more powerful than just taking someone through a workout, because at the end of that workout, the workout's done and your job and your influence is finished. And really my goal is to, when someone finishes training with me, whether it's an online coach, whether it's someone who's even bought kettlebell body, whether it's a one-to-one client or whether it's a boot camper, I want them to have things that are solid that they can take away, that they've learned from our time together, that they can implement in their lives in the future, that will continue to see them getting results. Because, you know, otherwise I'm no better than any workout DVD, any quick fix mentality diet, and that's so not what I want to be part of. I would definitely say any good trainer would definitely turn themselves, you know, personal trainer is what people look for, so it's what we put on our websites, but, you know, any good personal trainer will see themselves as a coach who wants to coach people into, you know, better lifestyle, better habits, better training, and better nutrition, really.
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting thing to me, and it's funny. Last week's guest was a personal trainer. Next week's guest is a personal trainer who actually happens to be my sister, and she does this. This is a fairly new career for her, but she does it very much part-time, and she does teach one class, but she works with individual clients. The thing about it is, Caroline, I have any number of friends who have hired a personal trainer, and this is the way it always goes. They have good results. They like it. They like their trainer. They like the fact that having a trainer makes them more accountable. And then they get to the point, and these are people who can afford to pay for a trainer, they still, many times, feel kind of silly about spending the money. They go, I ought to be able to do this myself. I ought to be able to do it alone. Why, you know, why am I paying $75 an hour or whatever it is? Why am I paying $150 an hour plus parking? You know, whatever it is, they come up with a reason that you know, and it mostly it's kind of a guilt sort of thing where they feel like they should be able to do it alone. So what do you think about that? How do you combat that?
I think, you know, if someone does, and I have clients that I train, or, you know, that I do train regularly, that will not exercise without me, you know, and I totally get that. And, you know, and that is fine. That is my role as well. If there are people who just need me because otherwise they won't do the workout, you know, and I have clients, I'll write them a program to do when I'm on holiday. I'll come back and I'm like, did you do it? And they're like, no. You know, I can't work out when you're not there. And that's fine. I think if you stop training with a trainer when you're that kind of person because you think you should be able to do it on your own and then you don't do it on your own, then, you know, that's just kind of silly.
It is silly.
If you can't train on your own, then you're going to need to have a trainer or you're not going to get results. And that's your specific situation. I think we all need to, you know, realize what our situations are. And maybe sometimes trying out, not having a trainer, and see if you can do it on your own, or even get your trainer. I mean, I do this with clients. You know, and I love it. I would love it if all my clients would train for me for a certain period of time and then would go on to like a monthly coaching program where I write them a program and they do it on their own. And I check in with them every month. And I do offer that to clients. I do it online and I can do it in person. If someone's reasonably local, I can meet them once a month, take them to their program. And if somebody is motivated enough to work out on their own, that's an absolute, and it's like what I do with Mike Marler. He writes me a program. I don't even talk to him on the phone. He sends it to me every week over email, and that's it. You know, and that's because I will do it. And I think everyone should maybe experiment with that and see if they can. But if you're the kind of person who needs someone to be there coaching you, then if you stop because you think you should be able to do it, then it's slightly crazy. But there are so many programs, I mean, more so in the US, it's getting much more popular here, where you can train in a group. You know, you don't need, I mean, it's not like group, so you've got boot camps, which are one thing, which are like set hours that you turn up. But most gyms, like Results Fitness, the Rachel Cosgrove and Alan Cosgrove, amazing gym, and their whole model is built around the fact that you book a slot and you train, and whatever time you book, there'll be maybe two other people and there'll be one trainer. So you're paying a fraction of the cost. You know, the trainer is supervising all three of you, but they can give you enough attention, because actually in a one-to-one session, sometimes, you know, once you've seen them do one rep, they're going to do them all fairly well. So you can, that's another option. So for people who do feel that they need supervised workouts, but they don't want to pay the money for one-to-one, that is definitely, it's a viable option. And I think, you know, most decent gyms and most decent personal training studios are offering that now. So maybe that's what they need to be looking out for.
I don't know, but, you know, as you're talking, I'm just thinking about different ones, and I'm thinking about how this would be a fascinating subject for a book, is how people view these sorts of things. Because it really is strange when people do, when they're having a good result and they would quit anyway. You know, they would quit knowing that they were getting a result that they'd not gotten before, but just because there's some sort of, you know, kind of dyed-in-the-wool belief that this is something, that having a personal trainer is an ultimate luxury, even for someone who is accustomed to luxury. Now, I do know that you believe in the best of worlds, even though there are reasons to do it, even if it's not fun. You believe that exercise and the exercise program should be fun. I'm curious, since a lot of your exercise also enables you to be healthy and fit and participate in all these different sports that you excel at, do you tend to attract clients who are also involved in sports or who have some sort of sports-related goals to bring them to the work that you do with them?
Not really. I do, I have professional sailors and that sort of thing. A lot of people come to me and they've seen that I'm a windsurfer and they like the idea of getting fit enough so they can do something like that. So I get an incredible amount of women who will it comes out of nowhere and they're like, oh, I'd love to do something like that. And that has been the thing that's kind of maybe differentiated me to other trainers for them is that I've shown them that I'm not some obsessive gym nut. I've got other things that I'm interested in and that the fitness is a sort of tool to get other things. So it's not that, it's definitely an appeal for people, but I have the standard people, people who are frustrated with their body shape, people who aren't getting results, busy professionals, new mums, people are getting, I'm getting married at the end of this year. So I can totally understand people's mindset, but people trying to get in shape for a wedding, that's when you want to be in the best shape of your life ever. I'd certainly get more of that. And that is your sort of standard client base, I think, for most people, because that's who I enjoy working with. It's great working with really super motivated sports people when you do get those clients, but the challenge is really helping people who struggle. So a program for someone who's already fit and motivated is bread and butter, and a lot of my online clients are actually it's that, because you can send them programs and they're just going to do it. But the people I coach one-to-one are definitely, the people who do have all these struggles that we all have.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's great. It almost sounds missionary. I was not aware that you were doing a lot of individual work online. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's not something that I heavily kind of advertise particularly, but I get plenty of people who, it might be people who've done kettlebell body and want more personal attention. I had a client who moved to Dubai, so she wanted to keep up with her training. Another client who moved to Spain, and he wanted to keep up with it. I do quite a lot of networking and people who just live way too far away for me to train. And actually, on a one-to-one basis, I'm completely full, so I don't have any space. So if anyone else wants to train with me, it will have to be a kind of online program. It's just a case of, I give people a questionnaire, they answer questions, they tell me about their goals, about their workout experience and that sort of thing. If someone is near enough that I can meet them once a month, then I can do a one-off session where I show them their program. But if they're not, then I can just write them a program. If they've got any questions, we can talk on Skype or we can just email. Sometimes even I'll get people to, if they've got a problem with a certain exercise or they're not sure if they're doing it right, I can get them to video it. Find me over a video and then I can critique it and comment them and send them a video back or whatever. So, the online, it just makes things absolutely so easy. And as I said, I'm doing online coaching with Mike Marler. He doesn't use Skype. It's just pure email, but, it works fine. It's certainly something I offer. It's not something I particularly promote, but if anyone ever does want to do it, then I'm certainly quite open to do it. If someone is the right person, if they're prepared to do the workouts themselves, which obviously anyone who contacts you about online training is obviously knows that they're going to do the workouts. I just think for me, even it adds that extra boost. I've been really, really busy because I'm organising an event next week, if I wasn't doing my workouts for Mike, because I know that at the end of the week I've got to send him an update saying, look, this is what I've done this week, I might have slacked off a few times. So, I'm motivated, super motivated, but even so I would have found that excuse to go, oh, well, it's a rest day today. So
Well, that is intriguing. You know, the whole online world, of course, is intriguing to a lot of us and to virtually everyone who listens to this radio show. Just seeing what what can be accomplished, and also taking a look at the limits. And the fact that you are doing this and learning to do it and doing it both as a practitioner and also being coached online, I'm just kind of fascinated by that and will be interested to see how that develops. I can imagine that being very popular, a very popular option for people. Have you ever done online? Have you ever done any group work? Do you do
group work online?
Yeah, doing group coaching. Is all of your online coaching so far to individuals, or have you ever done it with groups?
Yeah, I think it would only ever be to individuals, really. You know, group coaching is one thing on a one-to-one basis. Obviously, you could do group calls and that sort of thing, and I've not really done much of that. And I suppose I probably will start doing kind of Q&A sessions online a lot more. But, yeah, as far as my online coaching, in terms of a service that I offer, I think it'd just be a bit too complicated, really, to offer a group coaching online service. I do have my member site, that obviously that's essentially a similar thing. I've got, you know, a lot of people that can access things online, but no, I don't do any group online coaching at the moment.
Okay. So that, I mean, a lot of times when people talk about going online, one of the reasons they do it is they want to leverage their time. And it sounds like you are almost at the limit of how many people you can work with, unless you get into a situation where you are working with more and more people, you know, less individually online. But it's an interesting thought. I'm trying to think if I could do some sort of I could have a coach and also lie to my coach if I could do it online. You know, I could pretend I could do play like workouts, which I'm sure would give me a fabulous result and probably fall into that category of completionism. Because, see, Caroline, that's the trap I fall in. I want to go back to that just a little bit, because I do think this is Women Are Not Funny After All, and this program, I think, has been very instructional but not particularly funny. But one funny behavior that I admit to is that I can buy a DVD, and in doing that, an exercise DVD, I mean, and in doing that, feel like I have accomplished an activity towards exercise. Or I can buy a sporty outfit, or, you know, the best example of all is I have a huge collection of golf shoes. And they don't have to make it out on the course for me to feel like I've accomplished something. Or the new putter that I buy every spring, because I just know it's going to improve my game, you know. It's like the very act of buying a putter has anything to do with becoming a better golfer. But it's very easy for me to convince myself in my head that those are activities that not only lead to something, which obviously they don't, but the fact that they could lead to something in some way makes it fabulous, and it's a big step forward. So I guess bottom line is I'm trying to convince you that if I were your client, I would be your most annoying client.
I like annoying clients, though. So long as I can make some progress eventually, that's what I've got some people who literally will test my every limit, and it's devastating sometimes. Like on a day in, day out basis, I feel overwhelmed with stress when they come back with making the tiniest step forward or steps back. But when after a few weeks or whatever, and they're like, oh, look at how much I've changed, and you realize no matter what, the changes that you can make to even the most resistant person can be so life-changing, and it makes it worthwhile. I mean, if someone really is a nightmare client, I don't train them. I will sack them. I will get rid of clients who just aren't willing to make any changes. But I still have clients.
Caroline, I have to thank you. You have been just a wonderful guest, and you have left me with a great gift. And that is, you've given me that goal, that huge goal that I admitted to you I need in order to be motivated. I have a goal of being your most annoying client possible.
Yay.
Without getting sacked. You know, there's a little trick there. You tell me I can be annoying. You like annoying. But if you're too annoying, you get sacked. So
I don't think I like annoying, but I can deal with annoying.
I have a goal to become your most annoying client without being sacked. And, you know, then once I accomplish that, no matter what the results to my body are, I will have achieved completionism. Thank you so much for being with us for this afternoon and for what is tonight for you. Good luck on your event in Southampton next week. And also, I want all our listeners to check out Kettlebell Body, and you'll find the links on our website.